the Shroud of Turin is claimed to be the burial cloth of Jesus Christ. Scoffers are trying to say that it's a medieval fraud, it's a fake. But it's well documented that the Shroud existed before the Middle Ages. Here's a brief history. The Shroud was carried from the tomb of Jesus by Peter and taken to Edessa, Turkey. The Shroud was lost and wasn't rediscovered till 944 when a Byzantine emperor sent an army to bring it to Constantinople. In 1204, the European Knights of the Fourth Crusade sacked Constantinople. They took it back to France, where Margaret de Charnay transferred it to the Savoy family. In 1532, a fire in the Savoy Cathedral in Chambéry, France, damaged the Shroud. And in 1578, the Savoys established their capital in Turin, Italy, and took the Shroud with them, where it remains today. And in spite of the overwhelming evidence, which you're about to see, there's only two points that these scoffers try to bring up to disprove the Shroud of Turin. One is the carbon tests that were done in 1988, and the other is a reputed letter from a Bishop Darcy. And this reputed letter said that this bishop wrote this letter, that he knew who made the Shroud or forged the Shroud. He knew the artist. That's what this letter was all about, and that's what they're trying to claim proves that the Shroud is a fake or a fraud. That doesn't prove it at all. In fact, this reputed Bishop of Darcy letter has never been proven genuine. None of the copies of the Darcy letter are signed or dated. There's no proof that the Pope ever saw it or that it was ever delivered to him. In fact, Pope Clement VII allowed the Shroud to be exposed to the public during this whole time. There's no evidence that it's in the handwriting of the bishop it's purported or claimed to be. It's simply estimated that it's from 1389. The artist or forger is not even named. There's no official transcript of any official investigation. The first photographs of the Shroud were taken by Segunda Pi in 1898, and he was shocked to find when he took the pictures that the negative image was a positive image. And Barry Schwartz, who's actually Jewish, he's the Shroud documenting photographer, he says this, quote, "Assuming that the Shroud were manufactured in the 14th century, it would mean that someone would have had to conceive the concept of photography approximately 650 years before it was invented. I don't think so," end quote. Some of these scourge marks on the Shroud appear only under ultraviolet light, which means that the forger would have to paint the marks so that they'd be invisible to the naked eye and then discern that ultraviolet equipment be invented some 650 years later. That's impossible. There's not a trace of paint pigment on the Shroud. There are no brush strokes. The images on the Shroud are directionless and therefore could not be painted, at least not by a human hand. Kevin Moran, optical engineer, says this, quote, "The Shroud image is made from tiny fibers that are one-tenth the size of a human hair. The picture elements are actually randomly distributed like the dots in your newspaper photograph or magazine photograph. To do this, you would need an incredibly accurate atomic laser. This technology does not exist," end quote. And also, if someone was to paint the Shroud, they would have to have a 20-foot long brush because the image isn't even discernible much closer than that. They also found blood on the Shroud of Turin. According to medical physicist Dr. John Heller and blood specialist Dr. Alan Adler, they found not only the markings on the Shroud were blood, but blood highly loaded with bilirubin, a bile pigment that would only show up if a dead man had been severely or traumatically beaten. And pathologist Pierre Ballone came to the further conclusion that the blood spots were human blood and of the type AB. In fact, there are 13 tests that confirmed that blood was on the Shroud. The image on the Shroud is negative, but the blood marks are positive. The blood marks on the Shroud have remained red, and why it hasn't darkened by time and oxidation is unexplainable. At the back of the toes on the Shroud, there's an original bleeding when the man was alive, and then in the tomb, there was a renewed bleeding. So two blood flows, and this is impossible for someone to forge. In fact, the experts were shocked by the way the blood evidence was transferred to the Shroud. It was done perfectly without one smear, which practically, humanly speaking, is impossible. Dr. Max Frey was a Swiss criminologist. He was one of the leading experts in dust and pollen analysis in the whole world. In fact, he single-handedly developed a technique to determine where criminals had been by testing samples of dust and pollen from their clothing. And he was consulted on many crimes by police forces of many nations. Dr. Frey's objective was very simple. If the Shroud was forged in France in the 14th century, then only the French or Italian pollens will be found in the cloth. But his exhaustive analysis found some 58 specific pollens, only 17 were native to Europe. The rest were from Palestine in southern Turkey, the site of Edessa and Constantinople, and this meant that the Shroud had been in these places at some time in its history. In fact, 13 of the pollens come exclusively from Palestine and are growing in Israel today. Professor Ray Zelovane found in the shroud linen microscopic bits of cotton under the microscope, and not just plain cotton, but cotton with a certain number of twists per centimeter. We have to realize that cotton has a different number of twists per centimeter depending upon what country it's from. And cotton grown over here, for example, has 20 to 25 twists, and cotton grown over in the Middle East has 8 to 10 twists, and the cotton found in the shroud has about 8 twists per centimeter, so it fits exactly the kind of cotton that's in the Middle East. And cotton isn't even grown commercially in Europe. They found on the shroud many highly accurate images of many flowers, many hundreds of these, 28 specific flowers they found to a good degree of accuracy. That all these flowers, what's important about these flowers, they all grow in Jerusalem or within 12 miles of Jerusalem. So whatever produced the image on the shroud also produced a high energy field producing many images of every object that was in the shroud itself, and hence we have a highly accurate image of these flowers. They've also found dirt on the footprint of the cloth, and this dirt has been found to come from Jerusalem's Damascus Gate and nowhere else. And they found three-dimensional information in the Shroud of Turin. And this is incredible because we have to realize that a painting or photograph only has two-dimensional information, height and width. And the shroud has been found to have 3D information, and they put it under a special machine called the VP8 analyzer. And the VP8 analyzer found that in the shroud image there is encoded three-dimensional information which an artist could not have put there. It's also a Jewish custom when people die to put coins over the eyes when laying the corpse out for burial. And in the test that they did examining the shroud Turin, it looks like there's a coin over one of the eyes, the right eye. And this coin has 24 coincidences with a coin called the lepton, which was put out by Pontius Pilate between 29 and 36 AD. And when you look at this coin, you notice the staff. Remember the staff and the letters UKAI. And now we're going to look at the shroud, reproducing it closer and closer, larger and larger. And under high magnification, a Father Philus found this. You can see the staff and the letters UCAI. And Father Philus was shocked to see this. But he wondered why there was a C instead of a K. But in 1981, at the British Museum, he found two coins that had a C instead of a K. So this information would throw forging completely out of the question. Father Philus said, quote, "Even the wildest imagination cannot now justify any claim that the tiny letters 1/32 of an inch could have been printed on the cloth. Other features that prove the authenticity of the shroud, the locks on the side of the face is a Jewish custom. The body on the shroud is not even straight. The abdomen appears swollen, showing that the cause of death was suffocation. The legs on the shroud are not broken, and the Romans who crucified their victims always broke the legs of the crucified." And this goes back to Exodus 12:46, where it says that they wouldn't break a bone in his body. The blood flows. We have to realize that when you're crucified, the hands fall to a 25-65 degree angle, and so the blood flows a certain way. And it's exactly the blood flows on the shroud show that it was of a man who was crucified. In fact, studying the photos of the shroud caused Dr. Pierre Barbery, chief surgeon of the St. Joseph Hospital in Paris, France, to say this, quote, "If this is the work of a forger, then the forger would have to be a trained anatomist, for there is not a single blunder." Basically, you also have, when a nail pierces the median nerve in the wrist, the thumb goes automatically into the palm, and that's what's shown on the shroud. And this wouldn't invalidate the prophecy, "They have pierced my hands and my feet, I can count on my bones," because anatomists in all countries and throughout history have understood the hand to consist of the wrist, the palm, and the fingers. This is a picture of a Roman scourging device called the flagrum. And you'll notice it consists of a handle onto which are three leather strips that are attached. And each of these leather strips have a dumbbell-shaped object attached, metal object. And this device was used by the Romans as a means of punishing an individual by beating his body with stripes. And if you look at the size of the dumbbell-shaped object on the end of the flagrum, it fits perfectly into the wounds on the shroud. One author wrote that there are 120 scourge wounds on the Shroud of Turin, and Jewish law limited the number of lashes to 40, and 40 times 3 is 120. The wound in the side of the shroud measures 1 3/4 inches by 7/16 of an inch, which exactly corresponds to the size of the tip of the Roman spear called the lamea. It's also called the spear of Longinus, and it's kept in the Habsburg treasure house in Vienna, Austria, and legend has it that this is the spear that pierced the side of Jesus, and it was owned by Longinus, a Roman soldier assigned to duty at the crucifixion site by Pontius Pilate. What's interesting is that Hitler believed this legend, and he visited the Habsburg treasure house when he was 19. When he invaded Austria at the very beginning of World War II, he took the spear because he believed that he had to have the spear to go out and conquer the world. Going back to the anatomy of the shroud, the buttocks is rigid with rigor mortis, and some scientists have said that this shroud, whoever was covered in the shroud, has been dead not more than 40 hours. Forensic pathologist from Los Angeles County, Dr. Robert Buckland, finishes his analysis of the shroud by saying, quote, "The evidence of a scourged man who was crucified and died of suffocation is clear-cut. The markings on this body are so clear and so medically accurate that they are, in my opinion, beyond dispute." And the other question is, why would anyone keep this kind of relic, so gruesome a relic, unless it was the true burial cloth of Jesus Christ? But shroud advocates suffered a serious setback when the carbon 14 dates came back in 1988, where it said that the shroud was from 1260 to 1390. But C14 is far from an exact science. In fact, freshly killed mollusks show that they've been dead for 3,000 years, while bristlecone pine, the oldest trees on Earth, always date too young by 2,000 to 3,000 years. Evolutionist William Stansfield said this, quote, "There is no absolutely reliable long-term radiological clock." And so C14 dating is based on a number of assumptions, such as that the rate of decay has always been the same throughout history. The amount of C14 in the atmosphere is the same as it always has been. It is also based on the assumption that the geologic column is correct, and we've proved that that is not correct. Three labs were selected to perform the shroud carbon 14 tests. They were given three linen control samples of a known age, to test the accuracy of their lab testing. One sample was known to be from 3000 BC, and when the test came back from the three labs, their numbers were off by 1100 years, and the testers defended these errors due to contamination of the samples, but after extensive retesting, the sample was still found to be 1100 years off. And so there are too many variables that it can affect test results, and besides, the shroud sample takers and their labs violated 14 scientific protocols that were established to ensure test accuracy. And also, these labs carried out their tests by consulting one another. And Secretary of State Casseroli, who was rumored to be a Freemason, gave supervising responsibility for the carbon 14 tests to research director of the British Museum, Dr. Michael Tithe. So it's strange that Cardinal Casseroli would give the supervising of the reputed burial cloth of Jesus Christ to his declared enemies. And what's interesting is Dr. Tithe wrote a letter to Jacques Even, director of the radiocarbon laboratory at the University of Lyon. And he asked for a cloth, him to find him a cloth, similar to the Holy Shroud in every detail. And so Jacques Even looked around, he found a cloth that was very similar to the Shroud of Turin, made at the end of the 13th century. And Dr. Tithe denied writing this letter to Jacques Even until his letter was published, and then he admitted it. So what they did was, when they did this test, they cut off a little piece from the actual Shroud of Turin. And this was all done before video cameras on April 21st, 1988. And the three men involved were Dr. Michael Tithe of the British Museum Laboratory, Cardinal Anastasio Balestrillo, the custodian of the Shroud of Turin, who, by the way, even before the carbon 14 test, said he didn't believe the shroud was authentic. He said it was similar to a holy painting. And Professor Luigi Ganella, the Archbishop's science advisor. And so they cut the piece off the Shroud of Turin, and then these three men went to a separate room where no video cameras could go. No one could go. And what these three men did in this half an hour that they were by themselves with the piece of the Shroud of Turin, no one knows, because these men have never told anyone what happened during these 30 minutes. And it becomes apparent, though, that there is a substitution of cloths. And the size of the cloth that the labs tested, the three labs where this piece of shroud was sent to, is not the same that was cut from the shroud. And for some reason, the Tucson lab received two shroud samples. At first, everyone denied this, and then later, everyone admitted it. In fact, we can't get the samples that they tested because in carbon 14 dating, the samples are destroyed. The chief tester at Zurich, Switzerland, Dr. Woofy, he stated publicly, even before these tests, that he thought the shroud was a fake. So All these people that were involved, or most of them, seemed to not believe in the shroud anyway.
So and they had a biased agenda to find that the shroud was a fake. And so that's what they were looking
for. Exactly. That's the way it looks. And when these supposed results came back from the three labs, that it was between 1260 and 1390, Professor Ed T. Hall and Dr. Tyth of the British Museum held their own press conference, and written in large numbers on a blackboard behind them were the supposed results, punctuated by an exclamation point, 1260 to 1390. The London Daily Telegraph of March 26, 1989 tells us of some of the possible motives. They reported, on Good Friday, March 25, 1989, 45 businessmen and rich friends presented to Professor Ed T. Hall of Oxford £1 million, notable for his services in having determined last year that the Shroud of Turin was a medieval fake. Hall said that he was using the funds to create a new chair of archaeology science at Oxford to be filled with Dr. Michael Tyth. So Dr. Hall assisted Dr. Tyth in the crime by providing him with a chair at Oxford as a reward for his work in defrauding the people of the world of the greatest religious relic of all time. And so if the shroud is reproducible, why doesn't someone reproduce it? No one can. The skeptics cannot reproduce it. And the shroud shows very clearly that Jesus Christ lived, Jesus Christ died, and Jesus Christ rose again. So I've shown throughout this whole video that not only God exists, but the Catholic faith is the true faith. And it's one thing to realize what I'm saying, it's another thing to act upon it. And I say, someone that's truly concerned, that truly cares, as a convert to the Catholic faith, that if you don't embrace the Catholic faith, you'll be lost for all eternity. And if you are a Catholic, pray the rosary, wear the brown scapular, stay in a state of grace, fulfill your state of life. And the evidence is before you, the miracles, the proof. So if you look at the early church fathers, they believe in the Mass, they believe in the Eucharist, they believed in all Catholic teachings. And that's what the true faith was, and that's what the true faith still is today. People want to talk about the Bible. The Catholic Church decided what books were to be in the Bible. And the Catholic Church has told us on all issues what we must believe and not believe, what is sin, what is not, what will send us to hell, and what things we must believe to gain eternal life. And if I go to any of these non-Catholic churches and ask them, what must I believe? They'll point to the Bible. But the problem is, what passages do I take literally? Which do I take figuratively? And basically, if the Holy Ghost leads all people to interpret the Bible, how come you have tens of thousands of different Protestant churches all believing different things about the Bible? And none of them claim to be infallible. And so who settles a dispute? Who hands down a decision? Or has handed down a decision? Or they'll say, just believe in Jesus and you'll be saved. Well, Matthew 7:21 says, not all that say, Lord, Lord, shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he that does the will of my Father, he shall enter the kingdom of heaven. And no, we don't believe in Jesus unless we accept and follow all that he has commanded. And this theory, once saved, always saved, you can never lose your salvation, that isn't even biblical. St. Paul says in Philippians 2:13, to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. He says in 1 Corinthians 9:27, he says, when I'm preaching to the faithful, I fear that I myself may become a castaway. And so he talks about salvation is running a race to the end. If where you're going to spend all eternity doesn't concern you or doesn't interest you, isn't high on the list of your priorities, well, you're definitely going to go into the fires of hell. And once you arrive there, there's no escape. Your eternity is fixed, and you'll burn and weep and suffer and be tortured by demons for all eternity. And God doesn't want that to happen. He says in 1 Timothy 2:4 that he wishes for all men to be saved and come to the knowledge of the truth. And what you have heard on this tape is the truth. And if people think what I'm saying is very foolish, then you can always say to them, what are you going to be doing in 200 years from now? Well, I'll be dead and forgotten. And everyone you did know on earth will be dead and forgotten. And your body will be 6 feet under the earth, and your soul will be in purgatory, in heaven, or burning in the fires of hell for all eternity. Basically, this is reality. That's why our Lord says in Matthew 16:26, what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and suffer the loss of his soul? That's why he says in Matthew 6:33, to seek first the kingdom of heaven and his justice, and all things will be added on to you. That's why Genesis 3:19 says, remember that you are dust, and to dust you shall return. That's why Ecclesiasticus 7:40 says, remember your last end, and you will never sin. Basically, no matter what way you look at it, your time is running out, and no one can promise you another year, another month, another week, another hour, or even another breath. And so, if you don't want to spend all eternity burning in the fires of hell, embrace the true Catholic faith, keep the faith, and may you hold it to your dying breath.